All right, talofa, and welcome to my presentation on implementing the local public health system in American Samoa, a U.S. territory. I'm representing today the Department of Health, my colleagues there, Va'ato Fayono and Jackie Tulafono, who are unable to join me, as well as FEMA Prevention Partnership, the place I used to work. I have no disclosures, relationships to disclose. First, FEMA Prevention Partnership is a technical assistance agency based in Tucson, and they're the main TA provider for the American Samoa Department of Health and other health agencies there in American Samoa. I was an intern for them for 2 years during my master's of public health at University of Arizona. So today we're going to talk first a bit about the context in which this assessment took place to understand sort of some of the considerations and limitations to the local public health system's performance assessment tool, with American Samoa being the first territory ever to implement this tool. We'll go into the healthcare system there, and then we'll talk a bit about the assessment, and then we'll go more in depth into the process through which we went, and then into some of the findings structured around considerations to those findings, and so what, why does it matter, what's the situation. So where in the world is American Samoa? It's about 6,000 miles from LA, the only U.S. territory south of the equator, and it's kind of out there in the middle of about nowhere, sort of. It's a beautiful island. There's two main islands where most of the people live, Tutilia and Manua, and there's one airline carrier, so if it decides it's not going to run that day, then you're out of luck. It's been a U.S. territory for over 110 years, so its residents are U.S. nationals. It's rule of government is similar to a state. There's a governor who's elected and legislature. It gets funding through our federal government for services, and it's also eligible for a lot of competitive grants. Another interesting side note is that it has, there's 58 Samoans currently playing in our NFL, such as Troy Polamalu. Maybe some of you know him from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it also has the largest per capita number of people serving in the U.S. Army Reserve. Some demographics, it's about 68,000 people, according to the most recent census. The majority are Polynesian, and relatively young population, about 22 is the median age, and about a quarter are unemployed, and over 60% are below the federal poverty line. An integral part to American Samoa and to understanding both the work culture and just the community culture is Fa Samoa, or that's the traditional way of living and being connected to your family. These pictures you're going to see in these slides are ones that I took. These are not for tourists. These are just regular celebrations of births or here of an Ava ceremony. And it's integral to understanding the way family is done and chiefdoms and the structure of public health there and how things are provided and services are delivered. And so as this bottom point here sort of elucidates, it's every aspect of life, whether that's in the workplace at the Department of Health, is a blending of these, both traditional Fa Samoa and current U.S. government practices. And sometimes you have this culture clash that occurs, as we're all familiar with in global health, in trying to understand both keeping up with your traditional aspects, as you see this boy's doing here, and then also more of the modern American, you know, gangster lifestyle or something, like he's trying to do. And so one of these big things, which probably most of you have heard of in the Pacific, is non-communicable disease. American Samoa has some of the highest rates. Almost everyone is overweight or obese, and there's a huge problem with diabetes, and majority of deaths are related to non-communicable diseases. These are further exacerbated by the structure of healthcare there. It's very different than most of our state health departments in that they get a presumptive Medicaid block grant, and so they're just given an amount, a lump sum every year, and it's up to them to figure out how they want to spend it, and if the money runs out, it runs out, and there's no services provided. It's also, there's no one lead agency of public health in the territory. It's trifurcated, so that means there's three different levels, and so this is a challenge when you're trying to carry out a massive assessment, who's responsible to do it. So I worked with the Department of Health But there are also LBJ, which is the main hospital, and the human and social services. There's also a healthcare shortage area, just again emphasizing that it's very limited and the workforce is really small in terms of there being, for instance, no public health epidemiologist, no forensic lab, no digital laboratories. So now getting to the assessment part, what our main focus is today. The context in which this assessment occurred was what I've just mentioned, but also that American Samoa has never implemented any sort of large validated outside tool in the territory. And the main reason they wanted to do this was to give them a base, a grounding for how to eventually, long term down the road, get accreditation and get to improving quality of services and access. But the first primary goal was to identify the weaknesses and strengths and to inform healthcare planning. And so now we're going to go into the process, the three main steps that were involved. So the first was actually figuring out which tool to use. So not sure if you all are familiar, but the local public health system performance assessment tool is developed by the National Public Health Performance Standards Program and CDC and several other partners. And their overall aim is to improve the quality of public health practice and performance of public health systems. It's been implemented in the majority of our states and lots of different counties. And there's three different tools. And so one of our first things was figuring out which one to use. And as my former colleague, Chuck Palm, over there, hi, Chuck, as he knows, he was at the beginning stages with this, helping us figure out which one to use. And the issue is none of the tools were completely relevant to the territory situation. And so we had to work with our partners to figure out which ones made the most sense, and the local one was the one that was chosen because of the 300 and some questions, it had the most that seemed the most relevant. So we did that, and then it was going and inviting people to take part. And so I don't know how it works at your Department of Health, but most departments of health that I'm familiar with in the mainland have interagency mail, there's a mail system, but here it's very important to go and deliver the letters in person, to go and talk with people, to get them to come, to participate. And so it's also a very top-down tier relationship in that you have to be designated by your community health, by your director to go. And so that was the process, and that took longer than we expected, and there was also taking place during the summer, and so a lot of people weren't around. The implementation process, step three, it was over 3 days workshop. And any given day, we had 15 to 20 folks represented, mostly from ASG, from the American Samoa government. And it took place in Pongo Pongo in the capital at our office. And we went through question by question. There's 324 questions. And did a lot of just small group discussions, as you can see here, and around each of the different services. And then divided up based on who sort of had most expertise in that area. So what does the tool look like? That'll help you better understand what I'm talking about. It's constructed around those 10 essential public health services that we all learn about, we're supposed to. And within those 10, there's 2 to 4 model standards, which are sort of like your dream goal, what you want to get at. And it's not really expected that anyone's really at that, because then it means you're perfect and no Department of Health is perfect. And then it's getting at what's your activity, how well are you carrying out those services or their model standards. And so all together, there's 324 questions, and you have to answer all of them. And so we had to go through and vote often and decide who, you know, what situation represented the most, the context in which American Samoa was operating. And then we tallied them all, and then we sent those to CDC, and they retallied and submitted back the scores to us. So, oops, that one didn't come through. Okay. So these are, this is a breakdown of the results. So as you can see, there's, the red one is the average, and then the highs and lows are represented. So there's quite a range. And really what we found, what we did is we analyzed these results, we combined them with the qualitative results that were occurring, and then we had a lot of data output sessions, as in giving back feedback and presenting these to stakeholders throughout the two main islands. And really, it was that these findings don't necessarily represent the situation in American Samoa or the public health system, but it was a key way for us identifying where we are at and sort of guiding what we need to know more about. And so that's what I'm sort of going to talk about now, is what does this accreditation tool mean in the context of a U.S. territory or rural indigenous population. So some limitations or considerations to think about. These are all came up from both the participants during the assessment and or afterwards during those data output sessions that we did. So one was who is to lead. Like I mentioned before, there's three different agencies. And so the government applied for the funds, they got it, and then they were like, okay, figure out who's going to do it. And so figuring out who is responsible and then trying to get others to be involved. And so that was delayed because there was disagreements on how it should be carried out, who should be invited, who shouldn't be. And so this was a problem. And two other related ones to that are the public health workforce is small. And so if even one provider, main provider, doesn't attend, like the EPA, there's a lot of questions that you can't answer. So that we had to guess that because we had to answer them. And then also there's this work culture of referring always back to your head, which some people attribute to coming to being the way that the chiefdoms are done there in the village. You always refer to your chief, and so it's also you always refer to your director of health, and so if you're unsure, you don't answer. And so that became a question because of just the small number of workforce, there were a lot of people who just weren't familiar necessarily with all of these different questions. And so, for instance, no representatives from Homeland Security could attend, the courts, the Department of Education, or EPA, because it took place either during the summer, and so a lot of people go back to the mainland because they have relatives or they have people visiting, and also just because there was a small workforce there. So there's maybe just one person who knows about disaster preparedness and no one else. Other limitations included some of the questions were just not pertinent. There was a lot of questions about interaction between the state and local health departments. And those are one and the same in American Samoa. So that was difficult, but we had to answer those questions. So we just had to put, like, we're zero, we don't have a score. But therefore, that affected all the rest of the questions. And so it made it look like we're not doing anything, when really we can't do anything because there's no state and local, we're one and the same. There were also questions related to geocoding, to digital labs, and we don't have those, but the question came up, are those even relevant in the context of American Samoa right now? Maybe later down the road, but right now those things are not really necessary to ensuring quality public health. And then some other limitations were that people, this is the first time many have even heard of evidence-based practices of essential public health services, and so it took a lot more time than even some of my partners and I considered in implementing the tool, and so we had to spend a lot of time going through those and why these are important. And then there was also a lot of frustration with saying, well, we do this stuff, but just not in this setting. We do it at our local level. We have these village councils that go out and oversee things, and if there's an issue or a health problem, we go and address it, but we don't go to our Department of Health. We don't go to our hospital. We don't go to the social services. But those, there wasn't a space to open to share about that. Another one was the strict scoring rubric. So like I said, you always had to answer. There was no NA option. There was no other. So you had to put something, even if it made no sense. So it sort of masked the reality of the situation. All that said, this has been a huge, well, I was going to say huge baby step. That doesn't exactly make sense. But this has been a huge, like, first step for American Samoa. Like I said, this was sort of the first big tool that they had done. And it was really, as much as they were frustrated by it, really excited that they had this, like, huge thing from CDC. And they could tell them what they had done. And it gave us a starting, a launch pad, if you will, off of where to go. And we've continued to inform our planning based on this. And actually, one of the limitations of it being a small public health workforce also was a strength, because it was really easy to figure out who needed to be there, because there's so many folks. And then, like, if you start at ground zero, there's only a way to go is up. And it gave us a chance for everyone to get involved and to have an equal opportunity to share about the planning process and to give input. And like I said, it was their first experience with a major validated tool, and it helped them to gain familiarity with the sort of the importance of evidence and of data in our current public health context that we live in the U.S., and which was a new thing for them, and understanding that in order to be a big player in the department, in the Department of Health and in the health system of the U.S., of which they are a part of the territory, they really need to get more into the health, into evidence base. So what have we done since then? Board's getting accreditation, which is a long-term goal, is health performance planning. So again, we did these data output sessions with key stakeholders and partners. We incorporated their feedback and other qualitative and quantitative findings into our final report that we shared with our different partners and with CDC and HRSA. And then we've also implemented several other assessments that are getting more at the community aspects, such as this one that's mentioned up there, which was looking at nutrition and physical activity and health service experiences. Also did one that I did for my master's research on healthcare service and mental and primary healthcare, and why not that folks go and get health services. And all of these we've put into a huge structured report around the essential services that we're now going through and doing day-long data output sessions and planning and prioritization on root cause analysis and trying to figure out how we want to design our health performance plan in order to make it the most relevant and helpful to the situation. And that's scheduled to start in March next year. So to conclude, just four considerations for implementing this type of tool and maybe other accreditation tools in indigenous populations. As far as I can tell, we're definitely the first U.S. territory to do it, and I don't believe there's any tribal health department that has done this. And so the biggest one is seeking guidance in deciding which tool to use. Maybe that seems sort of obvious, but that was a really big strength of what we did, was meeting with those three partners, the hospital, the social services, and the Department of Health, and figuring out which one we wanted to use and trying to build consensus around that. And that helped a lot. Even though we still had issues with who's going to lead it, at least we decided that, okay, we all looked at all the tools and we figured out this one made the most sense for us. And then taking the time beforehand to really make sure you get all the decision makers involved, because sometimes there's only one person in that place who knows what's going on, and it's not like you have multiple community health representatives across different tiers. There are different levels of Department of Health. The mental health department is one person, you know, it's something like that. So you've got to make sure you have all of those people there. And then trying to think creatively about how to implement traditional and community health aspects, even though the tool doesn't ask about it. And so that's where, just like CDC suggests, bringing in these qualitative, the context into the planning post and pre and post stages, and to addressing those and making sure that those get incorporated, even if the results themselves don't show anything about those aspects. And then just understanding that really, even if you're not in a territory, no tool is going to give you the complete picture of the public health system. So that's all. Fafai Tai La Lava, thank you for your time. And my colleague Jackie at Department of Health, you can get the report from her, and then I welcome your questions after the presentation. Thank you.